Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to chumbacasino.com.
Chumbacasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit chumbacasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
This is quite a story. It's like, where do we even begin? How about here? She says she was a little girl the first time her father told her to grab the bags. It wasn't, you know, bags of her Barbie dolls and her toys. No, it was bags of lye. Heavy, white bags of lye. Chemical that's great for breaking down substances, you know. Bodies. And such. Helps mask smells as well. Also, can make some delicious lutefisk if you're Norwegian. There's like 10 people who got that. I'm not going to go into the recipe for lutefisk, but lye. There's a lot of people who heard the word lye and thought, huh. Now, heavy white bags of lye. She says she carried them across the property to a well, a dry well, deep in the wooded hills of rural Iowa. And she knew what they were for. Not because anyone explained it to her, because you don't have to explain it to a kid when the explanation is at the bottom of a 90-foot well. Lucy Studi McKitty says every time her father told her they had to go to the well, she knew what it meant. And she says every time she went, she didn't think she was coming back down that hill, because she wouldn't keep her mouth shut. And in that family, allegedly, silence was the only thing keeping you alive. That is where this story starts. Not with a case number, not with a documentary, not with the FBI. It starts with a kid who says she grew up inside something that most people can't imagine, and then spent her entire adult life trying to get someone, anyone, to believe her. Well, now there's a documentary on Paramount Plus about it. My Killer Father. It's about the Green Hollow deaths, murder, killer, depending on how you view this story. Let's talk about what's in the doc and what it's about and what the allegations are, because this is not a clear-cut case. Don Studi was never convicted of any crimes in his lifetime. It's his daughter that's now coming back after his death and saying, yeah, meet Dad. Donald Dean Studi was born in 1938. He lived in a remote wooded hill area in a place called Green Hollow. Sounds nice, right? Near Thurman, Iowa, Fremont County, about 40 miles from Omaha. People see it, they go, this is gorgeous. This is beautiful. If you watch the doc, you're like, this is, yeah, it's beautiful land. It's a kind of place that barely shows up on a map. It's deep ravines, thick woods, dirt roads that really don't go anywhere. At least not anywhere you'd want to be after dark. Studi died in 2013 at 75 years old. He was never charged in connection with a single homicide. But Don Studi was not an unknown man. He had a documented criminal history that included domestic violence. Reports described him threatening to kill members of his own family. Law enforcement allegedly considered his property a two-officer minimum, meaning if you got a call from Green Hollow, you didn't go alone. His own sister, the late Marilyn Kepler, reportedly wrote a 168-page handwritten journal documenting what she described as a life filled with alleged violence, beatings, robberies, arsons, and alleged killings carried out by her brother. Kepler told a Lee Enterprise investigative reporter that as she grew older, her brother grew to be what she called dead inside, a hitman, she said, who killed with ease and had no human compassion whatsoever. She said the body count could be as high as 100. Neighbors in the area reportedly warned their kids to stay out of Green Hollow, stay away from Don's studio, just don't. Don't go up there, whatever you do. According to Lucy, her father didn't just allegedly target the people around him. She says he preyed on women who were vulnerable. Women at bus stops, women at truck stops near Omaha, reportedly transient women, vulnerable women. Some allegedly tied to the yes trade. You know, kind of like Rex Heuerman in a sort of way. That's the allegation anyway. Women who had nowhere to go and no one coming to find them. She says he allegedly lured them back to the Green Hollow property. She estimates somewhere between 30 and 50 alleged victims may be buried in the wells. Some allegedly taken by him, some allegedly taken by others and disposed of by him. The number has shifted over the years. She was just a child when these things allegedly happened. And the scope of what she describes is almost impossible to hold your head or hold in your head at the same time. Lucy has a line that cuts right through it. You don't need enemies. When you had a family like ours, there's a slogan you put on the gravesite. Who needs enemies when you got dad? But you don't have to take Lucy's word alone to see the pattern. Look at the women who were personally connected to Don Studi, women whose names are known, whose deaths are documented, and you ask yourself, what are the odds? Because not everybody takes Lucy at her word on this. She has family members actively contradicting her claims. But that is something I keep going back to, too, after watching this doc, is what are the odds? There is room for question here. But when you look at the odds, it's like, I don't know that the odds are necessarily in the favor of this man not being some version of who he's accused of being by his daughter. Lucy's mother, also named Lucy Studi, reportedly died in January 1970. She was found hanging in a small closet off the kitchen of the family home outside Denver. The closet was reportedly so small that her knees could have touched the ground. Investigators who arrived at the scene allegedly found a bloodied room and evidence of a beating. The death was still ruled self-inflicted, but here's what sits underneath it, and this is one of the most disturbing details of this entire case. Lucy says her father allegedly talked about it for decades afterwards, not denying it, reportedly acknowledging it. She stated publicly that her father says he didn't mean to take out his mother, that he said he either choked her too hard or too long. Oops! I mean, think about that. According to his own daughter, Don Studi wasn't denying it. He was just disputing the method. It was an accident. Oopsie, went a little bit too far with my thumbs. Charlotte Studi, Don's wife, reportedly died on February 8th of 1984 at the age of 42. He had a lot of wives who died by their own hand, allegedly. Single gunshot wound to the head with a rifle. While she sat in her husband's car in Omaha, she reportedly left him following an argument. She was 5 feet two. The original ruling was self-inflicted, point-blank range, they said. That's where it stayed for nearly four decades. Charlotte's stepdaughter, Marie McGovern, reportedly said she was 15 years old when she got the call and that she never believed it, not for a second. She reportedly said the moment she heard, she thought he finally did it. He just didn't put her in a well. Charlotte's own daughters have pointed out something the original investigators apparently didn't find worth documenting. Nothing was located at the scene that Charlotte could have used to trigger that rifle at her height. And then there's Anna Tortoff, Don's girlfriend, who reportedly died in July of 2006 from medication overdose. Lucy alleges that before Tortoff died, she called Lucy and said something that still echoes through this case. If anything happens to me, it was Donnie. She reportedly said it was not going to be by her own hand. So you have multiple women across different states, across different decades, different reported causes, all connected to one guy. The documentary itself states it plainly. Don Studi had five wives, all reportedly accused him of abuse. Three are dead, two of those deaths self-inflicted. At what point does a pattern like that stop being a coincidence? You know? I'm curious, as we continue to go through this, I've got more here. Drop in the comments what you think. There's no right or wrong answer. I'm just curious. Here's where this gets complicated, and I'm not going to pretend it doesn't, because Lucy's path to coming forward was not a straight line. The first documented report from Lucy to law enforcement came in 2007, but the circumstances around it were kind of messy. Her father had reportedly accused her of stealing $16,000, and she in turn accused him of burying bodies on the property. That's the context. It doesn't mean she's lying, but it means the story didn't arrive in a vacuum. It arrived in the middle of a family dispute. Investigators reportedly could not find a single teacher, priest, or other authority figure who could confirm that Lucy had told anyone about the alleged killings before 2007, even though she's maintained she tried to tell people since she was a child. Her sister Susan has publicly, repeatedly denied everything. She's called it a lie. She says their father was strict, but he wasn't a killer. She says she's 2 years older than Lucy, and she would have known. She wants his name restored. And look, there's a lot of personality issues, in my opinion, in this doc with everyone. Nobody in this doc seems to be, in my opinion, operating from a place of a healthy mind. Nobody. Everybody seems to have motivation or reasons or a recipe to be saying what they're saying, not because they're necessarily trying to cover something up for the sake of Don Studi. But I think you have some people that the idea of reckoning with what could be this reality is such a weight to bear that they won't even go down the road. And I think we see that through the actions in this doc with some of the sisters. I'm not saying they're wrong, but I'm saying if you're not even willing to go down the road or look or explore the evidence that may exist, that you have the control to take a look at or not, which exhuming a body is one of them. If you don't even want to look, well, that may tell us everything we need to know about how critical you're thinking about this or how much you're trying to self-preserve your own sanity by not having an intrusive piece of information enter your orbit. We all do this. This is what we do as human beings. A lot of times we don't even realize we're doing it. It's usually very obvious to someone who may be looking at it objectively from the outside, but within that circle, especially with people who already confirm your, let's say, bias, it's sometimes hard to see, understand, and sometimes you're just not going to change people. People dig in and they don't dig out. We see it in everything. And I think you have some of that going on here. And I think you also have it going on the Lucy side as well. Everybody's very dug into a specific place, and any sort of evidence that may point in another direction doesn't even get absorbed, doesn't get processed. The story just keeps getting told from the same narrative over and over and over, depending on what version of the story you want to believe. With no one ever getting two true, solid answers, and maybe we never will get there. That's my opinion. So you got one daughter saying her father was a monster, another daughter saying he is absolutely not, a complicated first disclosure, shifting numbers. That's real. That's the mess of this case. And anyone telling you it's clean is selling you something. But here's what sits on the other side of that mess. Cadaver dogs have repeatedly alerted on the Green Hollow property. Four separate hits in 2022 alone, indicating the potential presence of human remains. Charlotte Studi's death has been officially reclassified. Kepler's journal exists, 168 pages of it. Neighbors and former law enforcement have reportedly come forward saying they were warned about Studi's children. A Fremont County deputy, Michael Wake, told a local news station that he'd grown up in the area hearing stories about bodies in a well and thought Lucy's claims were worth looking into. And despite the fluctuating numbers, despite the complicated disclosure, the indicators keep pointing back to the same place, the same well, the same hillside, the same man. In late 2022, all of this finally got enough attention to bring in agencies that could actually do something about it. After cadaver dogs alerted at four locations on the property, the FBI, the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation, and the Fremont County Sheriff's Office arrived in December. They brought equipment. They core drilled into a well to a depth of at least 85 feet. They spent parts of 3 days on a property that spans over 420 acres. They found nothing. Case closed. Official statement released. Everybody packed up and went home. Lucy says they drilled the wrong well. She says she wasn't even on site to direct them to the right one. The property has numerous wells, some wet, some dry, many long since filled in and nearly impossible to locate without knowing exactly where to look. Lucy has said from the beginning that the dry well is where her father allegedly disposed of bodies, not the water well that the agencies drilled. A private forensic dig in May of 25, funded by the documentary's production team, brought in forensic anthropologists from the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, cadaver dogs, and ground-penetrating radar. The dogs alerted again. The radar operators reportedly detected something underground at one site. But when the forensic team dug down and scraped the land, they found no anomaly in the soil to indicate the presence of wells. 5 full days of searching, and the wells Lucy has described for years still haven't been located. It's a hard result, and it's fair to sit with it. But there are two other developments in the case that can't be waved away. First, Charlotte Studi's body was exhumed in August of 23, paid for by the production companies behind the documentary. Pathologist Aaron Lind at the Douglas County Medical Examiner's Office in Omaha conducted a second autopsy, and what she found contradicted the original findings in ways that matter. The gunshot wound, originally described as point blank, was reclassified as indeterminate range. There was punctate discoloration on Charlotte's right arm, suggestive of stippling, which the pathologist noted could indicate a possible defensive wound, as if Charlotte had raised her arm to protect herself. Stippling is when your body is very close to the firearm being discharged. It's basically directly from the heat, the energy that weapon is exuding. And the only way you get it is by being that close to the weapon. The re-autopsy also noted a documented history of abuse between Charlotte and Donald Studi. and that Charlotte had moved out of their shared home before her death. And here's a detail that should concern everyone. The original crime scene photographs and autopsy photos from 1984, well, they've gone missing from the Omaha police records. Charlotte's manner of death has been officially changed from self-inflicted to undetermined. Her three daughters are now fighting Omaha police in court to unseal the original investigation files. Dawn Schultz, one of Charlotte's daughters, put it simply, she never got the justice she should have gotten, and they don't understand how he was so untouchable. Second, the documentary reportedly features testimony from an alleged accomplice, someone who allegedly witnessed or was involved in what happened at Green Hollow and kept it a secret for years. Director Angus James has publicly stated that his team found what he described as testimony from an accomplice who has kept his secret hidden for years, along with confirmation of other accusations. If that testimony holds up under scrutiny, it means Lucy is no longer the only person telling the story. It means someone else allegedly knows, and they're allegedly on camera saying it. A reclassified death with evidence of a possible defensive wound and a missing crime scene, and many missing crime scene photos, an alleged accomplice speaking, a dead woman's sister's journal, cadaver dogs that keep alerting. This isn't a case that's fading. This is a case that keeps building. And the people who closed it after 3 days are going to have to answer for why they stopped looking. Don Studi is dead. He's never going to sit in a courtroom. He's never going to face a jury. He's never going to answer for any of it. His family is fractured. One daughter says he was a monster. The other says he wasn't. And neither one of them is ever going to convince the other. The documentary, My Killer Father, The Green Hollow Murders, is streaming right now on Paramount Plus. Millions of people, yourself, if you watch it, you're going to hear Lucy's story. You're going to hear about the Wells, the lie, the woman who allegedly disappeared, and the investigation that walked away after 3 days. And somewhere on that Iowa hillside in Wells, it may have never been found, let alone properly searched. There may be women who vanished decades ago. Women who got off a bus in Omaha or walked out of a truck stop or accepted a ride from a man who knew exactly what he was doing. They didn't have names. Nobody is officially looking for them. Their families, if they're still out there, may have spent decades wondering what happened to a daughter, a sister, a mother who just never came home. Lucy said it as plainly as anyone could. My dad was a lifelong criminal and a murderer, and I don't need to solve every goddamn thing he did. But if I can get some bodies up out of that well, then I should. The case of Don Studi isn't closed because it was solved. It's closed because people stopped looking. And if those women are there, they're still waiting for someone to come back. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. I'd love for you to weigh in and get your thoughts. It's a fascinating story. It's a fascinating doc. We're talking with Bob Mata as well about it. Maybe you've already seen that interview by the time this drops on our channel. So if you want to learn more about it, Bob's been actually boots on the ground in this case and has very compelling, a take like only Bob could give on something like this from the digging that he's done on this case and his interactions with Lucy. So if you want to hear that, it's on the channel as well. Check it out. Press subscribe wherever you're getting podcasts as well so you don't miss any of it. Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Search that wherever you get podcasts and press subscribe. You can take us with you on the go. You can watch us on YouTube, Substack, wherever you like. Links are in the description. Until next time, my name is Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
A daughter says she helped her father carry bodies to a well when she was a little girl. You know, father-daughter bonding time. She says he covered them in lye to make them disappear, and they would have made lutefisk. Norwegians get my joke. She says he allegedly killed dozens of women over decades in rural Iowa, and that she's been telling anyone who would listen, going all the way back to 2007. And there's claims that she was saying this well before then as well. Nobody has found those remains. Nobody has proven her wrong either. Donald Dean Studley died in 2013 without ever being charged. His daughter, Lucy, is still fighting, and the question at the center of all of it has never been answered. What really happened in Green Hollow? New documentary on Paramount Plus, asking that question. My Killer Father is what it is called, and it is out as of today, which is the 28th, January, February, April 2026. I don't know what month we're in anymore.
Yep, April.
Joining us to discuss, myself and Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, Robin Drake, is Bob Mata, host of the podcast Defense Diaries, defense attorney and extraordinaire. You have been following this case. I'm hearing just all these noises.
It was from the screaming goat. It was
Jesus Christ.
You know, if our audience could see the chaos behind the scenes before we come on with Bob, you know,
I couldn't see the camera. I was looking in the prompter, and I'm hearing weird sounds coming in my earpiece, and I'm just
listen, man. It's very apropos for what we're about to get into today, and yeah. I'm laughing so hard at the Ludafisk.
I mean,
what
I thought of
it is, if you know, you know.
You know, you know. Yeah. Bob, you've been into this case, boots on the ground, for quite some time. A lot of folks are just learning about this through this documentary. Let's start here. What drew you in? Bring us on your journey of discovering the magic of Donald Studley.
Okay, there's no L. It's Studley.
Yeah, all Studley. Right, I'm so sorry. Listen. Yeah, Studley, yes.
Yeah, I mean, try to remember the potential serial killer.
Yes, right? Yes, Studley, yes.
All right, so I'm going to prepare everybody. I'm going to prepare everybody out there. I'm going to do a lot of talking today, so just if you don't want to
go for the Bob ride. We're on the Bob ride today.
That never happens.
That never happens. All right, so here's when that Newsweek story dropped. It's really a fascinating story, and I've been waiting for 3 years to tell it, truly. Yeah. And so when that Newsweek article dropped, it blew my mind, and it kind of hit – and it was that story that you were talking about, T, this girl's now woman coming forward and saying that she believed that her father was a serial killer and that he had killed somewhere between 50 and 70 women.
Quite a claim. And, yeah.
And I'm like, what in the what? So immediately, and I had just wrapped up my Gacy season. And okay. I was like 3 episodes into Garcia, and I hadn't even started YouTube yet.
Okay.
So I'm like, okay, Allison, I'm like, we got to get this woman on the phone. So I tell Allison, we kind of concoct this idea. And I'm like, look, in her article, she's talking about helping her father dispose of the bodies. Like literally that her and her siblings would, in the winter, you know, use sleds to drag the bodies up to the wells. And, you know, then dad would dump them in, or if it was a wagon in the summer, whatever the case may be. So we're like, well, if she's at all concerned about criminal liability, maybe just call and leave her a message that you're a criminal defense attorney. And, you know, you're not implying that she's in any kind of trouble. But if she has any kind of questions about the potential for them to be looking at her as an accomplice, potentially, even though she was young. So at any rate, Allison leaves the message and Lucy calls her back. Mm-hmm. And from that point forward is just an incredible tale of like 16 months of like dealing with Lucy Studley and her sister, Susan.
Yeah.
And taking trips to Green Hollow and spying on the feds when they're trying to do the initial the whole thing. This is going to be an amazing conversation, and it's going to be the first place that it happens because I haven't even put it out on my shit at all. And I've just got a lot to talk about.
You do,
I really went TikTok famous when I was down there the first time. And I didn't even know how to use TikTok because I'm an old man. You know, it's like I'm saying, what do I press? You know, so I'm sitting there, but in real time, I would go live and like the entire town by the second day knew me. Like, mm-hmm. so it's down there and there's Tabor is probably the biggest town. And just to give you an idea where this area is it's right on the border of Nebraska and Iowa. Mm-hmm. So Omaha is about 30 miles away. Omaha, Council Bluffs are the two biggest cities that are closest to Tabor and Green Hollow. Green Hollow is exactly like that. If you hear about the hollers down in Tennessee, it's this odd holler that is completely out of place in Iowa, which is as flat can be, and it's farmland. When you drive through Iowa, you have to prepare yourself mentally to get through that long, flat state because there's nothing to see other than corn. That's it. Mm-hmm. So to get down to this hollow, and it was the creepiest place, man. It was like, it was so weird because it's kind of like in a ravine and it's got some croppings on both sides of it. So it's really like this enclosed area that you drive back into and there's no way out of it once you go back in. So let's start with the story with, so that's how I get to start speaking with Lucy. All right.
Yeah. So the Newsweek article and her claims in that, which are pretty, I mean, 50 to 70 bodies. That's a lot of people.
Huge.
But not a lot of people seemingly looking for these people too.
No one.
Which is very bizarre as right. well. But okay, continue.
And you know
on.
Me, and that's what I've been doing. I'm you know me. I'm going stat heavy on trying to figure this out.
Oh, I know you are.
Because I'm going at it.
Yeah, and so I started having conversations with Lucy, and my first thing that I want to try to figure out is she telling the truth? Sure. So like in every conversation I'm having with her, I'm looking for red flags. I'm looking for inconsistencies in the stories. You know, I'm doing what I do as an attorney when I'm talking to my client and I'm saying, well, you know, this is what they're saying you did. Did you do it?
Yeah. You know, kind of poke holes. Yeah.
See. You gotta poke holes. And, you know, so I get in these really, really long detail oriented conversations with her trying to figure out if this thing tracks, because the thing that made me believe the story was true was the fact that the outcry started when she was a child. Mm-hmm. Had she, because we've seen recent cases of people coming up with the same type of story that my parent was a serial killer and they were exposed, you know, that it was a money grab. So there was that side of it that was obviously like percolating around in my mind that this could just be a money grab. Right. She got somebody to bite on the story. It was Newsweek. They ran with it. So that's all going through my mind when I'm getting these into these discussions with her. So I'm trying to probe for as many details as she can remember. Now, the fact of the matter is at that point, she's 52 years old when I'm talking with her. And it's evident to me that she suffered some kind of trauma. She had serious trauma. What it was what we were trying to figure out. So in the meantime, like as soon as I start doing the TikToks, when she sends me down, so say, I'd say like 2 months goes by of me talking to Lucy and you know, she's like, and I told her like right up front, I was like, I really want to do an investigative podcast in this case. Like, mm-hmm. I'm your guy. Like, just I was trying to get her to go listen to Gacy. I'm like, that's how I deep dive. That's 36 episodes. It was the deepest dive, blah, 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 blah. So she's like, you know, she's like, I really only trust the guys from Newsweek because they're the guys who finally told my story after I've been telling people for 40 years. And I'm like, okay, I get it. You know, so I'm like, but I'm telling you, you could trust me. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll keep everything completely confidential. I'm not going to go out. The only things I'll ever put out there are things that you tell me to put out there about your story. Mm-hmm. So I'd say it's like we're going into, I think it was the first winter, because I think I made contact with her 2 months, like for 2 months goes by. So I think that was October, November, whenever of 23, when that story dropped in Newsweek. Mm-hmm. So I get a call one morning and she tells me that people on the ground in the area in Tabor are in Thurman. Those are the two kind of like main little towns there, are telling me that they're seeing like a ton of black SUVs, like just hauling down the highway, and they're heading towards the property. Mm-hmm. She's like, I think they're doing the dig. I'm like, I'm on it. I said, I'm getting in the car. So I got in the car and I drove the 6 hours to Omaha, mm-hmm. you know, or right to Omaha. I had taken that drive many, many times on the Garcia case. So it was a very familiar drive for me. So I end up getting, so that day I left, packed up my car, got down there. Allison's trying to find me an Airbnb. She finds this old kind of like, it's a, more of a boarding house. And, you know, I just got a room in there and it was great. You know, so I got there. Soon as I pull into town, you know, I decide I'm going to go to Green Hollow. You know, I'm going to drive in.
Yeah.
And as I'm heading down there, where their trailer used to be is deep, deep into the hollow. Okay. So you got to drive all the way back. There's obviously no lights back there. There's no street light, nothing. It's pitch black. And I'm driving back there. And I had been trying to contact the guy whose name is Pat Chittick, who was living, currently renting the trailer back there. Mm-hmm. Now, this isn't the same trailer that Don lived in and the kids lived in, but it's located about 20 yards from where that trailer used to be. So I get back there and I had been on the phone with Lucy. I'm like, I'm heading back. Like, I'm going to go see if Chittick happens to be outside, or I'm going to go knock on his door. Cause what I'm trying to do is gain access to that property so that they'll let me come on the property, because I know that there's a fence line that is separating the two properties, which would have been the Studi property. And then Sean Smith and the Smith family owns the property where the wells were actually located. Going down, I didn't understand that part of it, because when I was reading the article, they didn't really delineate between the fact that this wasn't all the Studi property. Mm-hmm. Like in my mind, I'm reading the article and I'm like, oh, they had a ton of land. It's all farmland out there, you know, and these wells were, you know, just randomly placed out in various areas on the property, which is massive, at least Sean Smith's is. So I get down there, I see somebody smoking a cigarette. I get out of my car. I'm like, hey.
I'm Bob.
I'm here to find the bodies.
Hey, how you doing? You know, so it's like a weird thing. And they're like, who are you? It's a female. I'm Bob Mata. I'm here. I'm working with Lucy Studi. I'm like, have you heard anything about this story? She's like, oh, yeah. She's like, yeah. She's like, I don't want to talk to you. So I get back in the car. I'm like, okay. You know, and I'm like, I'm going to leave. So I turn around and drive out. And I'm like, all right, I got to get Pat on the phone. I'm like, there was a female out there. She wasn't interested in speaking with me. It is like 10 o'clock at night. I get it. I'm going to go back first thing in the morning. So I go back to the boarding house. I check in. Before I do that, I actually go down to where Lucy tells me I have to go, which is by this eerie old graveyard that I think, right.
Like, old man Jenkins is there. Scooby-Doo episode.
That's Old Man Jenkins.
So, dude, like this whole thing was so surreal, like being in this moment. It was just by myself. No,
yeah.
You know, it's like I had no partner with me. So it was like, and oddly enough, I had rented a car that morning. I had Allie bring me to the rental car place and they gave me, like, I didn't ask for it, but they gave me a white Chevy Caprice. Mm-hmm. So it looks just like a cop car.
Okay.
So which comes into play.
Better than a Scooby-Doo van that I thought you were going to say.
Right. They gave me the magic mystery machine.
Yeah, or like a pedo van, something like that. No, nobody wants to have that.
Thing. Yeah.
So
yeah,
I go back to the place. We dig up Chittick's number, and I'm able to. I started messaging him actually before I call him on Facebook, and he responds. I'm like, hey, kind of tell him the whole story. I said, this is what I'm doing down here. You know, I don't want to disturb you at all. You're not going to even know I'm here. But what I'm asking is for access to your property so I can climb up on that bluff, because Lucy's telling me that the feds are just beyond that fence line, and that's where they're doing the soil samples in the well. And she just wants me to verify that they're actually doing it and to see if there's any dogs out there and to make sure that they're in the right area because Lucy was always claiming that they were in the wrong well, that mm-hmm. there was a dry well and there was a wet well, and that they were doing the wet well, and that's not where the bodies were. The bodies were in the dry well, meaning that they weren't actively using that well anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with this property, the Smith's property, is when you're envisioning a well, you're probably thinking that there's either like a stone structure and a nice little handle and you're pulling a bucket out.
Yeah.
Nah, none of that shit. So, and beyond that, there wasn't even like a stone circle. These wells had all been filled in mm-hmm. over the decades because Sean Smith is a cattle rancher. Okay. Yeah. And he had cows and cattle out there. And so they didn't want the cows falling in the wells.
Sure.
So we started filling all the wells up. That created a problem in the sense that the wells were not all mapped out. Mm-hmm. So we have this issue wherein Lucy's trying to go from 45 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what the digging looked like. 45 years ago, trying to go from her memory, looking for landmarks that she remembered as a child.
Yeah.
Sitting in certain places, like a fallen tree. Oh, I used to sit on this fallen tree and I'd look at this particular thing and this is it. This is the spot. So none of that has even taken place yet. Okay. So the way that it went was the feds had gone down with them. They had done a cadaver dog search. They got numerous hits on what would be the Studi property on this side of the fence line up on that bluff where I was standing. I saw the markers on there. They had put like pink ribbons on each tree where the dogs had hit. The problem with that. So I'm calling my guy who's a sniff guy who's got cadaver dogs, you know, to try to get the down.
He's a good sniff guy.
Everybody needs a good sniff guy. If you want to try to understand the science of dog sniffing, especially in an area where it's not flat land and where there's going to be water runoff, mm-hmm. you know, where the dog is sniffing doesn't necessarily mean, and where the dog is hitting doesn't mean that's where the body is because of the water runoff over the years. I mean, the scent could have drifted down with the water as rains happen, right? And they had a massive flood in that hollow when Iowa got that massive flood like in the late 80s, early 90s.
Like 93, I think.
Yeah, like just a massive, massive flood. So the entire area was covered underwater.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm up there. So Chittick says, yes, I'm giving you access. I'm like, you're amazing, dude. So I get up there and I can see the cops out there. I can see the feds. I can see the local sheriff. They're all out there. And what they had done, the feds were like, we don't want any of you local guys out here. You guys are going to stand guard in case there's interlopers like me.
You know, yeah, Bob watch.
Right. There's more modders showing up.
Right. And in the meantime, I'm doing these TikToks. So, and again, this is like literally the first time I'm doing TikTok. I'm literally figuring it out. And as I said, I really am an old man. So it's like it. And that is very much a kid's app.
I think,
and this is in 2023, man. So I'm like sitting there trying to go live. I have a terrible signal. I don't know. So sometimes I'm recording and waiting to post when I have an internet signal.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, so I'm taking these videos. Sometimes I'm able to go live when I'm there in the moment. But I become like, I go viral as this story's breaking that I'm down there. But the interesting part isn't that. The interesting part is that all the cops, the local cops, were watching my TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
So they saw me down the night before. They saw me down driving into the hollow. They saw me at the graveyard and getting out and looking under the full moon. Like everything about it was the eeriest shit of all time.
I saw Bob turning into Teen Wolf.
Right, exactly. So, and then I see the area where, and this is again the night that night that I got down, and I could see all the heavy equipment just beyond on Sean Smith's property. I'm like, I'm not trespassing on Sean Smith's property. You know, I'm saying this on the video. I think I was live during that one. I said, I'm just going to look at it. I'm only going to try to gain access by people giving me consent to come under the property. I'm not here committing
such
crimes.
A good lawyer.
Yeah. And you know, just a good citizen, man. I'm not trying to break the law, you know? So it's like, especially on a video, cause I'm not a moron, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a lesson that many could learn in this world. But so the following morning, I get up
breaking the law.
Don't do it on camera. Yeah,
dude, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable how many people do it. So I get out there at the crack of dawn. I'm in that white Caprice. They're already there. This is like 6:30 in the morning, and they're down there. So Lucy says, don't go in the way you came because there's three ways in. There's in through the hollow. That was not the way to go. There's another one. I think it's called Cemetery Road, appropriately. So you drive past the cemetery. So I'm pulling in. I've got my typical short haircut. I've got my Ray-Bans on, and I think I'm probably wearing a hat, and I've got this white Caprice. So I've got like these glasses on, and I'm driving in, and there's a cop with like a clipboard standing there. So I roll down the window. I'm like, hey, what's up? He doesn't ask me. He's like, oh, he waves me in.
He thinks you're a cop.
Thinks I'm a cop. So I'm like, this is amazing. So I get down, and there's a bunch of cars parked. And I can see just beyond, you know, the staging area where they're getting everything ready. So I'm sitting there for a minute. I'm kind of like, holy shit, I'm down here. I'm like, what's my next move? Do I like go in? Like, do I walk in? So before I can do anything, the local sheriff comes and knocks on my window. He's like, roll your window down. He's like, hey. He's like, who are you? And he's like, give me. I'm like, I'm Bob. He's like, give me your ID. I need your driver's license right now. I'm like, all right. I'm like, here you go. He's like, how did you get down here? I'm like, he waved me down. He's like, the guy up there with the clipboard waved me down. He's like, well, you're not supposed to be down here. He's like, I'll be back. So he leaves for like 5 minutes, and I can hear him barking at people and screaming and yelling. And I'm like, maybe I'm getting arrested. I don't think so, because this area I'm in is not private property. I haven't told him I'm a lawyer yet. Yeah. I haven't pulled the, I know my rights, I'm a lawyer card, because cops love that when you do that.
Yeah, I bet.
Their favorite thing in the world to hear some big mouth say I'm a lawyer.
Dude, I got to go with you, Bob, because I have the best get out of jail free card I ever saw in my entire life. My retired FBI creds. Effing rock.
Yes.
Because no one sees a retired stamp on there. They freaking get me in everywhere.
Dude, I gotta go break the law with you too.
You're my partner in crime moving forward.
We could get anywhere.
That is the key to the kingdom. So he comes back, he yells at me. He's like, I've been watching your videos. You know, he's like, he's super pissed at me. I was like, well, then you know I haven't broken any laws. And I say, look, Sheriff, I'm not here to meddle. I'm simply here to observe. I'm not going to interfere in any way, shape, or form. I just want to watch. Lucy sent me down here because she wants me to check out and make sure that this thing is actually happening. At this point, she doesn't trust law enforcement at all. She thinks that everybody's full of shit. So that's all I'm going to do. He's like, well, stay out of our way. We won't have any problems. I'm
good
like,
answer.
Cool.
Yeah. That's good answer, you know, Bob. That's nice. Good job.
Yeah. And I'm like that. That's exactly what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. So by the time I leave that area, and I go back and I'm going to go try to talk to Chittick, who I know is at work, but he's given me access to the property. So by the time I get over there, they already have two crawlers staged at the opening that leads into Green Hollow. So I pull up. I'm like, hey, what's up, fellas? And they're like, yeah, you can't come in. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm like, this is public property. This road is a public road. You can't stop me from driving down. And he's like, I'm just telling you, you can't come in. And I'm like, well, who gave you that? He's like, I'm not telling you that either. You just can't come in. So I'm like, call your boss. I'm like, call your boss while I'm standing here. I'm like, I honestly said, I'm not trying to create an issue here. I'm just trying to watch, but I'm telling you legally, you have no authority to stop me from driving down this road at all. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's like, all right, I'll make a call. He goes and makes a call. He comes, he's like, man, you can't come down here. So I'm like, all right, that's an issue. And I'm going to make it an issue because, again, I'm not trying to cause any issues here. I'm just simply trying to stand on that fence line and watch what's going on. That's all I'm trying to do. And these guys are like, these two guys are like, man, we watch your content and it's really good. We like it. You know, so these guys are actually like rooting for me to get back there. I can tell. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to leave. So I'm 10 miles down the road and I get the call. And I forget who it is, because at this point I'm on the phone with 50 different people. Like I am trying to reach out to everybody in the area, all the contacts I've made, everybody that Lucy's put me in contact with. And I get the call that they've changed their minds and that they're going to allow me to go back. So I throw a U-turn. I go back and I'm on the fence line. So I get back there. I park. It's like I literally had to crawl up this like 15-foot dirt wall to get up to this thing, man. And it's like, and I'm on this landing, and I make it to the fence line. And that's when I see all where the dogs hit with all the marks. And I'm like, man, I really did want to go buy a shovel and just start digging up there.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I wanted to do. Cause I like, that was land I was allowed to be on. I know because of my Gacy thing where I'm trying to find additional victims,
yeah,
which we talked about so much. I'm like, if we ever discover a bone, we stop immediately. We call law enforcement. We get them out there and then they do their thing, you know, which would have been my plan then. And I'm like, all right, I'm just going to go to the fence line. So I'm on the phone with Lucy. She's screaming at me. She's like, where are they? What are they doing? And I'm like, I can see them. They're actually doing things. Cause like when they're doing the soil samples, it's like a 30-foot pole. So I could see that they were doing it and they were going in deep. And I knew what they were looking for was the lie. That's what they were actually looking for, because that would have substantiated her story. Cause there would be no other reason for lie to be in that well.
And right? for everyone watching and listening, what was the lie for? What'd she say it was for?
To help the decomposition of the bodies. Right. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to use lye, that's what you use that for. Lime, which is what Gacy used, yep, helps mask the smell. Mm-hmm. So they're two different things. People like oftentimes confuse the two.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right. She's like, I need you to go up on that, like climb up and go up on the high ridge. Cause there's another ridge. It's such a weird geographical area. And I was trying to use, there were two apps I was using to try to get the lay of the land from up above from satellite view, because Google Maps wasn't it. Like, yeah, Google Maps didn't show me like the topography. You know what I mean? So like, mm-hmm, I'm like, all right, I'm going to try to make my way up there. She's like, cause that's where the other well is. That's the well they're supposed to be at. They're at the wrong well. They're at the well that they searched at the first time.
Why do you think they're at the wrong well?
Yeah.
Based on what she was telling me. Cause she says that's where the wet well was.
Yeah.
So that was like the active well, because Don was going
then,
up.
Then where did they get that information from that they put him at the wrong well?
Because she wasn't invited to the first search. So when the feds, after the story broke, and she was relentless, like she really had been relentless for many, many years, just trying to get somebody law enforcement wise to go out there. She thought she had made a solid connection with a fed. Fed just kept, you know, putting her off, being like, we're working on it. We're going to get something done. We probably, you know, so when they finally get out there with the dogs, and this is before the Newsweek story broke, because I think Newsweek must have contacted law enforcement. So she had pushed it to the point where they were actually going to go out there and vet the information. Mm-hmm. So when they went out there, Newsweek was there for that one, but Lucy was not. And so they went out and they just looked in the wrong areas. Cause she kept talking about this mushroom trail, you mm-hmm. know, and that there was a shallow grave she was claiming in a mushroom trail that she had a distinct memory of them burying a body in this mushroom trail, which would obviously be the easiest find. So that well happened to be right near that mushroom trail. And like, she's trying to explain it to me over the phone and I didn't have a strong enough signal to FaceTime her. To show her where I was.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm trying to explain it. I'm like turning around. I'm like, look, I can see where your dad's trailer used to be from up on high, but like I'm on that fence line. And like, I don't know that she had been out there since the flood. So the whole topography had changed because of the flood. There had been
mass erosion. How come she didn't go with you?
She was in Florida and she like couldn't afford to jump on a plane like same day. Okay. Like it was happening so fast, they gave her no notice.
Yeah.
And she knew that I would jump in the car and get out there, which I did, you know? So I end up getting on this high ridge and I'm up there and I'm walking around and it's like, it's really pretty breathtaking up there. It's such a weird, kind of like a weird area to be in. Like I said, in flat farmland, it reminds me of like kind of Galena, Illinois, which is like the one place the glacier didn't hit in Illinois, because Illinois is flat as shit too.
Yeah.
Except when you get up to Galena, you actually have like huge hills. It's more like, you know, kind of like Missouri when you get into those states where they have something aside from flat land.
It's kind of Ozarky, if you will.
Exactly. So I get up there and I can see that there's another entrance. And so Lucy's like, that's the entrance we used to go through. And this one was probably about 400 yards west of where I was initially, like kind of in this area where they found, you know, that, that the dogs had hit in those five different areas, which would have made sense in terms of, because I'm trying to put this together, you know, like as I'm looking at the property, how were they gaining access? If this is true, like getting up with a body and you've got your kids dragging these things up there, you know, and they're, it turns out, which I didn't know before I scaled the rock wall or whatever it was, is that there was actually kind of like a path that had gone up that kind of curved its way up. And I ended up on that thing, that, that kind of like platformed area. So another 30 feet above that is where I end up standing. And then I see that there's another sheriff stationed on the fence line up there. So they're really trying to keep me like out of their business, like actively. Super nice guy. He's a deputy sheriff, you know, so I start having like this like hour long conversation with them. He's like, oh yeah, I watched your content too. And this is like a 60 year old man. They were all watching it, you know, like all of it kind of develop in real time. And I'm like, can you tell me anything? Like what's going on? And he's like, well, he's like, they put all the locals, we're just on guard duty. They're not letting us anywhere near what they're doing out there. I'm like, but you know, they're actually doing some stuff. He's like, yeah, I know they're doing some stuff. And I'm like, have they found anything? And he's like, well, he's like, the only thing I think that they found thus far is a horse bone. So I'm like, all right, that's it. So I'm having this really long conversation. Now, keep in mind that I've had, I don't know, probably like 100 hours of conversations with Lucy. And I've talked about this Gacy podcast, as I'm prone to do, a million times with her. And so I'm telling this cop about my Gacy podcast, as I'm prone to do. He's like, oh, he's like, oh, yeah. He's like, yeah, you know that Gacy's first victim, Tim McCoy, was from Green Hollow. And I literally like almost fell down. I was so stunned by it. Because, you know, my focus really of the Gacy podcast was to focus on the victims. And then he goes on to, so I'm blown away. I'm like, so you're telling me Tim McCoy, because I knew that Tim McCoy had come down from Minnesota and he got picked up in the Greyhound bus station heading back to Iowa for the high school graduation so he could celebrate with his friends. So I knew, I didn't know where in Iowa though. Mm-hmm. But I knew he was, that was his final destination where he was heading on the bus when Gacy snatched him up in Chicago. And I'm like, holy shit. So the guy keeps talking and he tells me, he's like, yeah, he's related to the Studies. And I'm like, what? Cause I like, so you have to like, at that point in time, I'm starting to feel like that I was like destined to be there. Like
yeah.
Some kind of weird fate shit. Because the odds of that being the case and me being in that point in time, having that conversation, finding out that information about Tim McCoy just blew my mind. And I'm like, yeah. Holy shit, man. I'm like, I think I'm like onto something. I feel like I'm in my mind. I'm like, I'm going to uncover like one of the biggest serial killers in the history of America right here. And I'm going to be like on the front line of it. And it's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And so I immediately, as soon as I end that conversation, I call Lucy. I'm like, Lucy. I'm like, are you related to a guy named Tim McCoy? And she's like, yeah, he's like a second cousin three times or some shit. He's like in her bloodline.
Wow.
And I'm like, how did you never, I've like, how many times have I talked to you about the Gacy thing? And you never thought to mention that you had a connection with this first victim, a familial connection. She's like, no, she's like, I told you I can't do that serial killer shit. I'm like, I'm not asking you to do serial killer shit. That's something where you just tell me, hey, you know what you might find interesting? I was related to his first victim. I'm like,
fun fact. Yeah.
I was like that. That was like a weird kind of turning point for me because I just didn't understand why she wouldn't have mentioned that because it was significant.
Yeah.
Like she had to know it was significant to me. So in any rate, that was a weird aside and that put me in this whole different mindset of like fate, like that I was like, cause I've never really been like a big, you know, fate like I am, But that changed things for me. Like, and I really started to think, man, I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be. And at that point, the full day goes by. I want to make it to town and I want to start interviewing the locals, you know? And I knew that I had been out enough to, you know, have established that I'm there on TikTok, and I knew that everybody was watching it. So I knew once I got into Tabor, and I was getting a million DMs on TikTok. Mm-hmm. They were like, oh, we live here. We want to meet with you. We have a story. So I like, they were just flowing. It was insane. It was like to watch your, like any kind of thing that you have on socials to like grow like that overnight. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. It's like,
yeah,
the notifications, and I'm like, and just the amount of DMs I was getting was overwhelming. So that full first day goes by and I don't really get any kind of news. Like, and I'm really trying to get some news as to whether or not they uncovered anything. Cause Lucy's on my ass. She's like, what, you know, what are you hearing? I'm going to the, like, and before I left for, you know, town that night, I went to the sheriff's office, tried to go in there, tried to sit with the sheriff. Cause I wanted to make nice with the sheriff, which I ultimately ended up doing, mm-hmm, you know, on the next trip down. And I'm like, hey man, you know, I'm just trying to get some information. You know, that's all I'm trying to find out is whether or not they found something. And he's like, I don't know. You know, he's like, they're not telling us anything either. And I kind of half believed him and I half didn't. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, whatever, I'm not going to push the point. So I end up going to the town, met with a ton of people, ate with a bunch of wonderful locals down there. Everybody was sweet as pie. You know, it was just like, I felt, you know, cause it's like you go into a situation as kind of an interloper, outsider.
Yeah.
And you don't know how they're going to take you. You know what I mean? And it's like either going to be, you're going to get massive resistance and a cold shoulder or super welcoming. And I got the latter, and I was fortunate for that because everyone wanted to talk to me. Like the mayor invited me to the house for dinner.
What do you think made them want to talk?
I think it was kind of like the fact that they can kind of get the sense that I'm a genuine dude. You know what I mean? Like if you go to my TikTok and the videos are up there, and I highly recommend anybody who's watched that documentary, go check out the TikTok because it's a very nice partner piece to the documentary, I'm sure. And I haven't watched it yet. I know Tony plowed through it this morning at the crack of dawn. I could just imagine Tony in bed flipping his TV on.
That's after watching all the cult shows too.
I'm getting up, getting ready to take my daughter to school. And I'm like, I got to start this doc if I'm going to get through it before we go on the air.
That's what I figured out this morning. My Paramount Plus had just expired because I put it on this morning too. I was like, God dang it.
Yeah. It's just like a little, you know, morning murder.
Yeah.
Coffee and murder.
We do that all the time.
Who can resist?
Yeah. My wife thinks I'm a nutter.
So yeah, but I think that was it, man. I think it was people, because I was trying at that point in time, TikTok, the max you could do on a stream was 3 minutes.
Okay.
So it was like I was really trying to cram a lot into 3 minutes, and I think that people were appreciative of what I was doing. They were appreciative of the fact that I was respectful of their town, of their privacy, of them as a people. And so I think that I was able to kind of build that rapport remotely through that account. And so, you know, and that worked well for me, and it was genuine. You know,
How did the locals, what was their take on everything at that moment in time in terms of the attention that this has been given in relation to all of the claims that Lucy has been making throughout the years? Because obviously he's never been charged with a crime. Don never has. But obviously there's the story, the tale, the legend.
And that's what I was getting to as well. Yeah. Were they inviting you in, Bob, because they were happy it was finally being told, or was it because of you?
I think it was both, but everybody had a story. You know,
did they feel like their story hasn't been heard? Because obviously Lucy feels like no one's heard her story until now. Did they feel like for whatever reason nobody was looking at this, that there's a mystery to be solved here? Are they sick of hearing about it and they just want to get a conclusive answer either way? What was their attitude on that?
I think the bigger story was really that Lucy had been making these outcries for years and they just wanted to know if it was true the same way the rest of us did. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it was like, and then when you combine that with the concept that their parents had told them stories about Don Studi.
Yeah.
It's just, and I'm talking about the younger generation, right. You know, for them, it became kind of a legendary story. you know, and it was like one of those
legend.
Like, don't go back into the hollows.
He's the boogeyman.
He's out alive.
He's the local boogeyman. Yeah.
He was absolutely the local boogeyman. And, you know, so as I'm progressing through the people and everybody had a story, and I was always asking them two questions. Do you think that it's possible that Dawn Studi is who Lucy's saying she was? And a vast majority of them said, based on, and this, the older people that knew him said yes. And the younger people that knew of him said yes. I mean, most of them were of the mindset that they were not going to be at all surprised if they started unearthing bodies up there. Mm-hmm. So then I start hearing, you know, and I'm really trying to dig in at that point. I'm trying to get some real history. I'm trying to find out. And I start hearing all kinds of shit about motorcycle clubs, about the Kansas City mob that might have been coming out there. And that was a very convenient place for them to dump bodies. And that, you know, Don was a low-level drug runner. And, you know, that was his connection. And it was close enough to Omaha to where Kansas City had its, you know, the Kansas City outfit had its fingers in Omaha, and, you know, word made it that there's a good dumping ground where nobody's ever going to look for bodies.
The train station.
That shit tracked. That shit tracked for me. Absolutely. You know, like it really did. And it started to make a lot of sense. And then I started hearing about this robbery gone bad at the supper club. And I have people reaching out to me, you know, they never solved that crime, you know, and I have people telling me that they know that Don, because it was like multiple people that had performed that robbery where I think two people were shot and killed. One of them was the security guy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I'm getting really good intel that Don may have been a part of that thing and that thing was unsolved. So I'm thinking, all right, well, this is a case that I can probably, without having to dig up bodies on the property. Cause at that point in time, I hadn't formed a relationship with the Smiths. That comes mm-hmm. later. Like, this is such a long saga, man. And I know we're 42 minutes in. This is all on the first trip down.
Yeah.
You know, so ultimately, just to kind of fast forward to that first trip, that following day. So the first day, I get in at night, the full second day, they're out there doing their thing. The third day, when I get down there to the staging area, I can see that they're pulling up camp mm-hmm. and they're calling it. So I'm like, oh shit. You know, like, I mean, they're done. And I haven't heard a word yet. So my first move at that point, and that's probably like 2 p.m. when I can see that they're pulling up camp, whatever they were. I was down creeping around on the fence line, seeing what I could see. I could hear people in the distance. I heard them in the area on the second day of where Lucy was claiming her well was, which is what she called it. And I'm like, all right, you know, she's calling me. I'm like, I can't see them, but I can hear them because there's a ridge. Mm-hmm. So I can't, you know, and I said, I'm not climbing over the fence. You know, they were explicit about me not coming in there. I'm not doing that. So she's like, but it sounds like they're in that area where you want them to be. So at that point, when I could tell that they're shutting it down, I head back to the sheriff's office in hopes that I will end up getting some kind of information. And again, I go in and I'm like, hey, you know, is the sheriff around? I wanted to have a chat with him. And she's like, no. She said, but I think he's going to be back in about a half an hour. So I go out to the car and I'm waiting. And then, you know, I see them get back and I go in and he's like, well, I can't tell you anything, but he's like, I'm going to issue like a press release here in the next, you know, whatever, 20 minutes, hour, some shit like that. And I'm like, okay. So I'm waiting. And then, and I'm checking their website and he posts it and he puts up this kind of cryptic thing. But basically the thing says that they didn't find anything mm-hmm. is the long and the short of it. So, you know, I make that call to Lucy. I'm like, well, you know, they're saying they didn't find anything. So, you know, like I'm both elated and bummed because that's such a weird situation. Like, you don't want it to be true.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
it's like, great. They found a bunch of dead people. Yeah. Right?
Like, I'm not rooting for 50 people to be in the ground. So I'm like, I'm like, you know, it's a blessing, really. You know, it's good. And she's like, I'm telling you, they looked in the wrong well. I'm like, I am telling you the odds. Like, you know, and at the same time, the whole time I'm down there, I've got Susan, the sister, just like drunk texting me. Like, that Lucy's like the biggest fucking liar on the planet.
Yeah.
She's completely full of shit. My dad was an asshole, but he wasn't a murderer. All that stuff. In the meantime, I got so much background from so many town folk, and I'm really putting the most weight on the people that knew him personally, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Secondhand news, the legendary stuff's one thing. It's great for a podcast. It's not great for an investigation. So I'm kind of like leaning heavily into the concept that the people that knew Don thought that he was capable of it.
Yeah.
Believed him to be capable of it.
Which is really, I think is the most major sign there, because how many times do we watch these true crime things happen, these murders happen, and 90% of the time people are like, it couldn't be him. But when you actually have someone says it could be him, that's major. Because normally big, people don't say that.
It's big. And it was like, I had people that were telling me first person stories that they had with Don. You know what I mean? It was like one of those things where, and they had no reason to lie about it, you know?
Yeah, because he's like, gone.
Right. And he's dead. I'm probing, you know, it's, I'm not asking surface level questions. I'm trying to get to the heart of it, you know? So I just left. So I end up leaving town. I, you know, that day, still of the mindset that Lucy's telling the truth. Mm-hmm. I said, you know, for me, the search continues, you know, because mm-hmm. she's so adamant about it.
So she's saying they dug in the wrong spot. That's the answer.
They were in the wet well.
Yeah.
And that it is not where she's claiming that they put the bodies. So, mm-hmm. you know, we continue on our conversations. It seems like it's dead in the water from the Fed side of it. And then I finally reach out to Sean Smith, who's the property owner. Because at that point in time, you know, I'm adamant at either proving or disproving what Lucy's saying.
Yeah.
And I've taken it upon myself that if law enforcement's not going to do it, I'm going to do what I'm planning on doing with Gacy. You know, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to get the GPR out there. I'm going to have, you know, and the problem with it, and we had the LIPAR/GPR, the ground penetrating radar, mm-hmm. which is really technology that they developed to find wires underground so that you didn't have to unearth people's yards and they'd know where things were buried underground. So it's seeing anomalies, you know, like people mm-hmm. that don't necessarily have a clear understanding what that technology is. You know, you'll see disturbances in the soil. That's sure. what it's looking for. So you're not going to see like a skull.
It's like a depth finder on a boat where it shows exactly. the little right. fish, like, oh, look at these fish don't look like little dots. They're
exactly.
Fish. Yep. Yep. Yep.
Exactly.
Could be fish, could be garbage, could be rock.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly. So during this time frame, I'm still deep in it with Lucy. We're having all kinds of conversations. At this point, like the stories that I'm hearing from her are repetitive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, she had a tendency to tell the same stories over and over and over again. The one thing that I'll say is that they were always the same. They were always consistent. Because that was the thing. If you got somebody telling the same stories and you're trying to figure out if they're lying, you're looking for small inconsistencies. And they were always incredibly consistent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I'm also at that point really trying to develop a deeper relationship with her social divulge more information, you know? So that's when I find out about Don's sister, who I'm sure that they had in the documentary, who had tried to kill her boyfriend with a hammer to the skull.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, this is a family where I started to really understand the depths of kind of like the mindset of some of these people.
The chaos.
And as far as the kids went, because I had two sisters, each one saying the opposite of one another. And then one sister who's stone silent, mm-hmm. not saying a thing. And then the interim, I've then got the stepsisters who Lucy had lost contact with forever. And when this story started to break, they reconnected. Right. And, you know, and they were of the mindset that the things that Lucy was saying were true. in terms of their memories. You know, and like the problem with it is that you're dealing with, which, like, I'd love to have you pipe in on this, Robin, in terms of like that, you know, that false memory or false flag thing that you have going on when you're, you know, trying to recollect, you know, 45 years ago and what you've built up in your mind and what's true and what's not true. You know what I mean? Like, that's where this thing was so fascinating to me, the psychology of it, because I have these two sisters that are just adamant about what they're saying, you know, because I was of the mindset, I'm like, if there's even a possibility of what Lucy is saying is true, why would Susan be so adamant that it's not? It can't be to protect the family name. I mean, and if it is, shame on you.
So there's a good, you know, I've been doing tons of research before this, after this, and plus from past cases. So the clearest thing I can think of that's going on is she definitely has trauma responses. She definitely has, I'm guessing, trauma triggered memories. I think there's a lot of truth in what she's saying. I think there's trauma exaggerations involved there. And so it could be as few bodies. It could be, I don't think there's as many as she's saying there are, potentially. Had bad things happen? Maybe murders, maybe. But at the same time, going back to your question about the sister issue, so that could be more against just you got to, especially if you said she's drunk calling you, you know, remember every sibling in there has their own trauma response to what they are witnessing at certain points in time. And so they're going to, and I don't think there's any protecting family name in this. She just might not like Lucy. But there's a lot of things that add up very well for Lucy's credibility. You know, there's no monetary issue here. There's no, I mean, she's not trying to profit or gain from this. At the same time, though, she's exposed to a lot of horrendous things. You know, mother's suicide or claimed suicide, but either way, death. I mean, she is dealing with a lot of huge baggage. Yeah. And so here's the interesting thing, though. Sometimes it gets unlocked when you start going in therapy. Sometimes you start imagining things that weren't actually there when you're going through therapy as well. I'm not a licensed therapist, so I always got to caveat that. Yeah. But a lot of the claims, the research I did, but you're closer to this than my AI is.
That's for sure.
So a lot of the claims, and I'm curious about this. So I looked up, you know, these childhood claims that she was making. Did you find anyone actually saying that they remember her saying it when she's a child? Because she's claiming she did, but this is saying that there's not verified.
Yes, I verified it with dozens of people
that she did claim it when she was younger.
Yes, it was absolutely like, so. Like, that was the first thing I was vetting, because it had weight for me. The weight for me in terms of leaning towards believing was the fact that the outcry had been going on for decades.
Right,
that was the most important factor to me. You know what I mean? Because, like, I mean, that would be the longest con in the history of cons.
Right. Mm-hmm. So here's where again, I'm edging. it all makes sense from what you're seeing, what you're claiming, what she's claiming, your interviews and all that. But here's where there's some outliers in here. One, you know, no one's coming forward as a victim. Like, there's been no reports of missing bodies. And I did research on this. You know, there was a lot of S workers in this area. Yep. There are not a lot of claims on that. And I get that, but you'd think there'd be one or two, or at least. And so that's kind of an outlier. The one of the big data point outliers is with serial killers, the probability of involving family members is like under 1%.
Right.
So that's kind of a blip on the data. Doesn't mean it's not true or isn't. It's just, it makes it an outlier if it is true. So I'm more edging on, I don't think there's probably 50 to 70 to 90, probably less, but it sounds believable and plausible. And unfortunately, you know, I go on the how you make the sausage side of this all the time, as you know, on the logistics side of why it's not getting more attention, because there's no victims. You know, the Bureau and organizations, you know this, they run on stats.
That's right.
And if you don't have a stat you can claim by a cold case being solved and victims being found and some being put in jail, the resource bandwidth that they're going to expend on it, I'm surprised they did as much as they did, actually.
Yep.
Because there's, what do you get out of it?
Exactly.
And that's the problem in cases like this. But it's not surprising from your amazing storytelling, your amazing involvement in this, that they made a documentary out of it. Oh, my God.
I have so many questions more about this.
Dude,
and I know
we'll do a whole part two because there's a whole
part. Man. I mean, honestly, next week we're going to pick it up because all the questions I want to ask today we haven't done.
We'll do
those next week. No, I wanted to get, I mean, once you started telling the story, Bob, I just wanted to hear the story and your account of everything.
100%.
And I think I want people to, I'm going to give everybody a window to go watch the doc on Paramount Plus. And then next week on Tuesdays with Bob, I want to go into the discussion of this, the questions that we're going to have developed out of this.
And watch the TikToks of Bob's too.
And watch those too.
They're great. That whole thing. Like I have them in a playlist. So
yeah,
even if you don't do TikTok, I'm going to start like kind of migrating some of the TikTok stuff over to my YouTube channel. Yeah. But yeah, it's like, it's an unbelievable story. It really is. And I'm like, Robin, I was saying the same thing in terms of the feds. I was frankly surprised too, because the bad guy's dead.
Yeah.
Like there's no end game for them.
And there's no one coming forward saying, where's my mom? Where's my sister? I mean, it's just.
Exactly. And I had my friends who were heavy duty diggers in terms of missing persons doing like, they were all in Namus. I'm like, you've got like, that's where I wanted to start. For me, I had to start trying to find people that had gone missing from that area, whether it be Council Bluff, whether it be Omaha, you know, and I'm like, I'm not seeing the names that I'd want to see.
I know.
And like, I had asked Lucy and we could probably wrap it on this because it was like, I had asked her flat. I'm like, how did you come up with that number?
Yeah.
You know, she's like, well, she's like, essentially, like I had a recollection of like two a year, and it went on for 25 years, which is how I kind of landed on 50. So I'm like, okay. I mean, I guess it makes sense because I mean, she had some very detailed stories. And again, I haven't watched the doc yet, you know, about one that took place in the trailer that she saw, like the actual homicide take place. There was another one, and it was the one that just drove me crazy, that there was a car that was buried not on the Smith's land, but that was on that, their side of the property in this kind of ditch. And she's claiming that the car was there. And I'm like, still, and that there was a body in the car. I'm like, why are we messing around with trying to find, you know, mystery wells on land that's been overgrown now for 30 plus years when we can go over here with the LIPAR? And we'll tell that story next week.
Because that's part of my questions too. You know, for that many deaths, there's got to be other things you can look at, you know, and find 100%. More data. 100%.
Everybody, watch the doc next Tuesday. We're going to go into it, and if you got questions, drop them in the question area here in the comments on Substack and YouTube, and we'll try to get to some of those too next week. My Killer Father. It is on Paramount Plus. It's dropping today. And Bob Mata, my goodness. What an interesting story today. Great storytelling. I love it. Yeah, I love these stories. All right. We will dive deeper into this next week because there's a lot to get through in this. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you get podcasts. Go check out Bob's podcast, Defense Diaries, and I'm beating you to it, Buried, also available.
Thank you, sir.
Go check it out, the John Wayne Gacy case there. And, of course, Robin Drake's latest book. It's right here. It's Not All About
Bye
Me. Available wherever you get books. Go check it out. And we will
leave a review.
And leave a review. Yes. If on Apple Podcasts, without a doubt. I have your email saved on that.
Review on Amazon.
Because I want to do it. I want to take the time to do it.
I promise I'm going to do it. I want to read it fully.
Yeah,
like that's you want a
25,000 words, 3 hours on Audible. It's a quickie. It's good.
If you go in at speed and a half, hour and a half. There you
that's
go.
Right. Yeah. Then I go blah, 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 like this.
It's like listening to the Micro Machines or an auctioneer. But and that's the funny part. Robin plays a really good auctioneer when you speed him up. It's kind of amazing. Anyway, check all that out, and we'll continue this conversation. Press subscribe. Until next time, for Robin, Bob, and Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
What's up, Foos? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.